Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Okay, y'all, I know we got audio problems, and I don't know why. Okay, this makes no sense. No sense whatsoever.
Yep.
All right, stand by, please. All right. Let's try it this way. I don't know. Yeah, thanks, Lee in New York. No. Tim the Toolman Taylor has not laid a hand on this. And Socrates has not been anywhere near... And you're right, Socrates would just remonstrate with me. Of course you are correct, Socrates. Naturally, Socrates. But the problem is that I have practically no gain whatsoever on my microphone to the point I can barely hear myself in my cans. And the virtual LED on the streaming interface is telling me that I'm pegged. Stop it. Audio pegged means something different. Quit it. Talk about the best laid plans of wombats and women. Gang aft to glee. This is super duper double plus infuriating and frustrating. I had an idea of where I wanted the program to go, but here let's get the program started in proper order. First of all, hello. If you stuck around through this night baseball version of trying to get the So anyway, there present in the chat room are Alien Jimmy and Anatole and Irish Dave and Squeaky and Theo. Thank you for popping by. And lots of cops this evening. Mm-hmm. Capable moderation being provided by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has chosen not to fold space and become Man Cave, and I can't frankly blame him. Maybe it's because winter has returned here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal Manchinistan that crap doesn't work this evening. I don't know. Sparky is, of course, capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, soup, and Horn chief agronomist and chief mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. I'm sorry if I'm a little beside myself here. This is too many cops, man. Oh, Steve, you always tickle me when you... Well, thank you, Matt, in San Francisco. It's any conciliation. Sounds fine to me out here on the West Coast. West Coast sounds fine to me, too, right about now. It's interesting. I was actually, I thought of, any time I see San Francisco, I think of you, Matt, and I think of our friends in the Bay Area, and it was a story on CNN about the pending sale of 550 California Street in San Francisco, and talking about how all the money real estate people are losing, they're going bananas, because it was supposed to sell for $350 million, and now it'll probably be lucky to get 60. And it does sound okay. It's just so freaking weird. I am literally 25% of the gain I usually use. And nobody's done anything in here. I mean, literally zero has changed. And that's what is all up inside my poor little noggin. But there was a lot of talk in there about how people don't want to come back to work in the office towers anymore. And a lot of hand-wringing throughout this CNN article. About all of that, and when will the people come back to work? And I was looking for somebody in the story to at least give an alternate opinion that, like, you know, this is y'all's fault, man. This is the greed and work yourself into the graveism of the 80s and 90s and aughts and teens and nows. People pretty much had it up to had it with it. And, of course, it's this huge office building. I thought, hey, I wonder if anybody ever thought of turning that into, like, affordable housing for people who desperately need affordable housing in the Bay Area. Because they bill it building's got to be paid off by now. It was built by, Jesus, the Nakasone conglomerate back. I don't know. Why am I even talking about this? But it was interesting. It was interesting to see that, I guess, our mega wealthy bettors are facing a paradigm shift, and they don't like it. Thank you, Tamara. Thank you so much. You sound good now, anyway. Thank you. It's the anyway that makes it art. Let me make sure I've got Skype up and running here. Okay. All right, now I can receive communications from Brother Deacon Asa at the mothership. Bill Woolrick says, you sound pretty good on head-on.live. Thank you. Maybe this is my new normal. This is Tuesday. Did Microsoft send an update through? Nothing was changed on the computer when I got up this morning. Didn't have to reboot or anything. But it's really weird. I'm sending subnominal audio through the audio interface, and it's just through the roof on the graphic interface on the Fab machine. It's the cat, says Matt, she said, rhyming. Downtown's really suffering because of all the people. There's a lot of hand-wringing of the power brokers, but San Francisco will rebound. I mean, just take 1906 as an example. Times were pretty bleak back then. Yeah. What, there's just a handful of buildings left from pre-1906, Matt? Do I have that correct? But, of course, the minute I read that article, I was like, oh, God, I can hear the Republicans now. It's all the homeless transes on the streets of San Francisco going pee-pee and poo-poo in the wrong bathroom, if they go in the bathroom at all. Exhausting. Just gets exhausting. We are just completely discombobulated for this program, because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And so I owe tremendous thanks. We owe tremendous thanks to Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth. And thank you to David up in Oregon, who sends a message, and I heartily endorse it. Property law sucks. Finals are going well otherwise. Sending love. Love coming back. Dear God, dear God, dear God. The rule against perpetuities. Just saying that simple phrase, still, lo, all these years later, gives me the fantods. 32 years later. Yep, property law does suck. Red acre, blue acre, green acre, black acre. Ugh. Steve, New York. Don't task me. So it is about the cat? Depends on the cat you're talking about. But thank you. Thank you to our second day of the month subscribers. Thank you so very much. Where we stand? Well, we had $100 to go on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge when we started the program yesterday. We finished the program yesterday with $90 to go on it. We still have a chance of finishing that off and thereby meeting the challenge. If somebody would like to help with that, only it's not 90, it's 80. Thank you to David in Oregon. And after that, there's the $300 that we try to raise on any given evening, you know, because that's just outrageous, right? We'll talk about that some other day. The sad thing is, when this stuff happens, since I'm not just the so-called talent, I'm also the executive editor and the producer, and I know, Stephen New York says rule against perpetuities. I just blacked out for a split second. It happens. It happens to the best of us. It's just, and you don't want any of us to recite. If we got, say, Billable Rick and me and Steve and Darlene and David and any other lawyers in the Horn community together in like a sidebar call, and all I had to say was rule against perpetuity, the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth could be heard on the moon, and then we'd get down to arguing about what it actually means. And we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago. I was talking with Roger, and I said I finally figured it out. Calculus is the English is to mathematics what reading Ulysses and As I Lay Dying and Gravity's Rainbow is to English majors. And it's the rule against perpetuities for law students. I wonder if medical students have anything that even remotely touches on this. And the thing is, there will be a rule against perpetuities question on the bar. There's no reason for it, but there will be. Ugh. So maybe I'm getting, well, I know what Scott would say. Scott knows exactly what needs to happen right now. Yep. I need a good regrooving. We got a lot to go into this evening. I have no idea whether I'm going to be able to play audio or not without blowing out everybody's speakers and or eardrums. Yeah, WFH, Lee in New York, says, work from home. Call it the COVID consequence. CEOs and other top management decided we could work from home. Now, they want the people to travel because they want it. I'm doing work from home. No commuting, more sleep, and. And it's sort of like, and I'm not just idly babbling here. I'm not vamping, and I'm not killing time. There's a massive national strike scheduled in France for June the 6th, I think it is. My grandbaby's birthday, anniversary of D-Day. Kind of makes sense to schedule it for June the 6th in La Belle France. Isn't my French accent just atrocious? And they're having a fit, and I mean that in the nicest way possible. They haven't rolled out Dr. Guillotine's merciful instrument yet. I mean, the plutocrats and oligarchs can be happy about that, but they're angry that Emmanuel Macron wants to run the retirement age up from 62 to 64. Meanwhile, us poor dumbass Americans, my generation, sitting there going, I hope they don't run me up from 67 to 70 on the day before I turn 67. Not that it's going to matter to me. And so I'm proud of the French working people. Because I kind of love the culture. I love the culture. What kind of? I love the idea of thinking that giving, ciphering, 60 minus 40. You know, giving 47 of years of your life to laboring for somebody else in a lifespan that is really not that long is a lot in the first place and said, nah, you got to work 2 more years. Fuck that. Really, seriously, fuck that. Because as I think Richard Engel was reporting for NBC from France, maybe today or yesterday, he was in the rain, and he said, the French have an attitude whereby they think that they work to live, not live to work. And you see, our betters here in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, amen, we're supposed to live to work. The most important thing in our worlds is supposed to be what happens when we get to work. And work does give a sense of purpose, but work has multiple meanings. I've always thought it would be really cool if people could say retire at 55 for Social Security purposes and then go and pursue something that they just absolutely always wanted to learn or do or know. And help make life better that way. Lord knows it's short enough, yeah, as it is. Yeah, because once you factored in childhood and the growth of awareness and everything, and the infirmities that eventually catch up with the vast majority of us, maybe you got 60 years of meaningful life on this planet. And that isn't much. Especially if you do the same thing, you know, on the same assembly line, what have you, forever and anon. So, you know, I hope the French squeeze Emmanuel Macron and the French version of the Supreme Court and les états généraux until they squeal. Vive la France. Allons enfants de la patrouille. Etc. So we'll get into the Supreme Court hearing that happened today. Hopefully I can play the audio. Steve in New York pointing out, the French people also have the gall to think they're in charge in a democracy. I know. Back to the rule against perpetuity, Steve says, I wonder if the fact that all fetuses are now born Turians, if this will impact the rule against perpetuities. Oh, dear God, let's get a bunch of drunk lawyers together and sort that one out. Because the rule against perpetuity says that all transfers, all future transfers must take place within 21 years of a life in being. And a lot of the rule against perpetuities is all about calculating what a life in being is. And Steve, Steve just threw a sabot in, since we're working with French, a sabot into the works. Because apparently a fertilized egg is a life in being. But what if that fertilized egg doesn't make it all the way out of the birth canal? As a life in being. Oh my, oh my, oh my. The rule against perpetuities was, of course, crafted when the understanding of human reproduction was fairly scant. But still, law students have to learn about it unto, yea, verily, this very day. Well, yes, I don't know if he meant to, but he certainly did. Billable Rick said, a pun by Steve from New York. Did I hear Steve say that the French have de Gaulle to think that they're in charge of their democracy? Yeah. Well, I think He said, yes, he did, and you caught it, and so that's a double cowbell. Which reminds me, I didn't find the regular, real cowbell. Thank God I've got a standby. But we got the Supreme Court to deal with. And we have some genuine pissing and moaning from Miss Lindsay and Josh Hall, an ass. He's terrible upset. He's taking a cue from Sammy Bad Breath's pissing and moaning opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal. And what you, they subjected us to assassination. Oh, shut up and go and change your robe. It's all damp. We got that. We got gun fun. All kinds of stuff. But I saw a headline, and it's the kind of headline that just me being me, I looked at it and something in. Okay, so here, and the story comes from Agence France-Presse. Oh, and by the way, solidarity with the writers in Hollywood. If this was video, you'd see me holding up my fist. Solidarity with the striking writers. Now, I saw this headline, and I am so tapped into, so tuned into the way things work in our muddled up, messed up, screwed up world, that I immediately went, no. Now, most of us, I trust, have seen a video at one time or another of an adorable little sloth slowly making its way across some paved piece of roadway, and you watch the video, and you go, please get across, please get across, please get across. Before the bus comes, or the motorcycle, or get across the road, little sloth, because they're adorable. They have these huge claws. And back when Og and Zurb were first wandering into the North American continent, there was a critter walking around here called a giant ground sloth, and there was nothing cute about him, but he's extinct. Headline. And this is, this is the third decade of the 21st century, and we've been through the COVID pandemic, in which no small number of people decided that they could beat a virus with an antifungal for horses and cattle, apple-flavored horse paste. Then a lot of them either died from COVID or shit themselves to death from the horse paste. Ivermectin works! So I see this headline, and I don't know exactly what to make of it, because it can go two different ways, and I knew which way I was guessing. Costa Rican sloth antibiotics offer hope for human medicine. Huh? So my first thought was, oh my Jesus, the maggots are going to be out there taking sloth medicine now. Because I guess precious little sloths with their sweet little faces, I guess they get sick. They get biological or bacterial infections that can be treated by antibiotics. And then the light went on in my poor little head, and I went, no, that's not going to be what this is. That would be bad enough, stupid people. No. I scrolled down and I read the first paragraph, and it's like, son of a... The fur of Costa Rican sloths appears to harbor antibiotic-producing bacteria that scientists hope may hold a solution to the growing problem of superbugs resistant to humanity's dwindling arsenal of drugs. Sloth fur, research has found, hosts bustling communities of insects, algae, fungi, and bacteria, among other microbes, some of which could pose disease risk. Yet experts say the famously slow-moving mammals appear to be surprisingly infection-proof. And so here we are. I'm sure Pfizer or another one of those humongous pharma outfits will be down in Costa Rica capturing, torturing, and killing sloths. Or, I don't know, shaving sloths. Maybe it could be competitive sloth shaving. Just asking a sports announcer to say sloth shaving several times could probably result in injuries requiring the said broadcaster to be removed from the playing field. So they're hopeful of finding another way of treating superbugs, which the superbugs, because this is the whole lock, burglar, mousetrap situation, which the superbugs will then evolve, and they evolve fast. Hi, Paul from Parts Unknown. I know you could probably do this much better than me. They will evolve, the superbugs will evolve faster than humanity's ability to shave sloths. Agence France-Presse quotes Max Javaria, a researcher at the University of Costa Rica, saying, if you look at the sloth's fur, and, well, this is great for the dinner hour in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. If you look at the sloth's fur, you see movement. You see moths? Really? Moths on sloths? At some point in time, this is going to turn into a Dr. Seuss book, isn't it? Moths on sloths. You see different type of insects. Bugs in rugs, a very extensive habitat. And I'm not being flippant about this, it's just... Obviously, when there is coexistence of many types of organisms, there must also be systems that control them. I'm sorry, you are not going to make me cover myself in moths. Butterflies, maybe, but not moths. Sloth hair, Steve in New York says, so that weird kid in nursery school who ate hair was onto something? Goes great with paste and paint chips. They found the possible existence of antibiotic-producing bacteria that makes it possible to control the proliferation of potentially pathogenic bacteria or inhibit other competitors such as fungi, according to a study published in the journal Environmental Microbiology. Well, isn't that just cool? But I don't see anything in here that says how they're going to get enough of whatever this organism is to manufacture it into, well, maybe once they've isolated it, they can synthesize it, and it can be, oh, well, I was just intrigued by the story, because I've just got a bad feeling about it. One woman who works at a sloth sanctuary in Costa Rica says, oh, yeah, we get them, been hit by cars, hurt by humans. We never get them in here that are sick. Maybe this ties into the whole work to live, live to work thing. They're called sloths, after all. They're not in a hurry. They got long claws, but they're really laid back. Okay, that's enough. Okay, it's time to deal with the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing today. Miss Lindsay, Lady G, unburdened himself. Sorry about the misgendering, Lindsay. Of course, he wouldn't extend the same courtesy to me. There was a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee today about our entirely corrupt and crooked Supreme Court of the United States. And naturally, Lady G was there to talk about some, well, the Democrats do it too. Take it away, Lady G.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too have expressed a desire for the court to be more transparent, to have rules that the public can relate to. I think we've been talking about that for quite a while. I've never suggested that the Congress should take over the court's ability to regulate itself. I do not believe that is wise.
Well, regardless of what he thinks is wise, how's that court regulating itself thingy doing these days with Fappy Thomas taking $500,000 vacations to Indonesia and the like? Real estate deals for Mama's house. How's Mom and them? Mom and them good.
The letter that was received by the committee was not just signed by Justice Roberts. It was signed by all of the judges. All of them have the same concern, not just one. So where do we go and what are we trying to do? I think here's what you're trying to do on the Democratic side.
I don't know if he's
Remember
got a margarita.
Remember when Senator Schumer went to the court and started yelling at everybody in the court? Not everybody, just pretty much our folks. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions. Awful decisions. We all have been in the boat of getting an outcome the Supreme Court we didn't like. But the majority leader of the United States...
But see, the problem here with Lady G is that, yeah, maybe... I can't remember when. I mean, given the makeup of the court, that the Supreme Court's issued a ruling that Lady G thought was horrible. But I don't think there have been any rulings that Lady G didn't like that reduced half of the people of this country, actually more than half, to second-class citizens. Yeah, oh well.
Senate went before the court, literally out in front of it, and threatened two judges. And Maxine Waters says, you ain't seen nothing yet. So we can talk about ethics, and that's great, but we're also going to talk about today of a concentrated effort by the left to delegitimize this court and to cherry-pick examples to make a point.
For the sweet love of all that's sacred and holy, can somebody please point to a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, or for that matter, a member of the Senate of the United States, Bernie Sanders included, who qualifies as the left?
The New York Times wrote an article a couple of days ago suggesting that George Mason Law School was up to an effort to take over the court by lavishing them with trips and influence.
No, that's the Federalist Society, dipshit.
Influencing their decision-making process by sponsoring trips overseas while they were on break. The New York Times did not tell us about Justice Sotomayor's travel to Florence, Italy.
They did. They did. Gorsuch invited her over, you know, to provide himself some cover.
They did not tell us about efforts Justice Kennedy took a three-week multi-trip to Salzburg, Austria, San Francisco, Aspen, Colorado.
Well, Justice Kennedy was a Republican appointed by a Republican who suddenly heard his mom calling, and or maybe Deutsche Bank, and then had to lickety-split, resign from the court, and make room for Brat Kavanaugh. Yeah. I know. Inconvenient, isn't it? Continue, Lady G.
Paid for by the Aston Institute and the University of the Pacific. Justice Sotomayor and Justice Ginsburg traveled to Florence, Italy on the dime of the New York University. Justice Jackson was reimbursed by the University of California, Berkeley, in 2016 and 2014 for traveling to the Aspen Institute. Chief Justice Roberts was reimbursed for travel to London to teach a class on the history of the Supreme Court.
Now talk about Chief Justice Roberts' wife making $10 million recruiting lawyers for silk stocking firms, Linz.
To students of the New England School of Law.
Wow. And not a mention of Fappy Thomas and his $500,000 vacation. Son of a gun. Yeah. Fire that legislative aide.
So universities throughout this country have been paying for trips of judges. But if you read the New York Times, you wouldn't know that, would you?
No. And you know what I still don't know? I didn't realize that Harlan Crow is a university. Or that there was a lawyer meeting on a remote Indonesian island accessible only by boat. There, where there's no Walmart for Fappy to hang out in. The parking lot of.
I can't say I read the New Republic, but this is a headline. The Democrats need to destroy Clarence Thomas's reputation.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have much of a reputation. There's a lot of fansies on the right wing side, but nobody reads his opinions and thinks that they're actually written from anything resembling neutrality.
That's sort of what we're here about. Well, it's not going to work. This assault on Justice Thomas is well beyond ethics.
Don't mention Ginsurrectionist, Lindsay. You don't want to do that. Oh, no, don't mention the fact that she tried to overturn constitutional governance in the United States, and her little hobby was the only one who voted to support Nitwit Nero in keeping documents out of Congress's hands. Now, don't do that, Lindsay.
It is about trying to delegitimize a...
Oh, a little too much gin on the cornflakes this morning.
...conservative court that was appointed through the traditional process.
No, it wasn't! Oh, you fucking liar! He was not appointed through the traditional process, this court, as it is presently constituted. This court has Gorsuch and Brat and the Handmaid, who all got in after Mitch McConnell blew up the 60-vote threshold for Supreme Court justices. Now, I don't want to hear a word about Harry Reid. Harry Reid did not touch the Supreme Court nominating process.
Response has been to pack the court. Virtually every member of the Democratic caucus, except maybe one or two, are for expanding the...
Oh, that was a little love. That was a little mash note to Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Ooh, isn't that sweet? I love it when spring comes and love is in the air.
Number of judges to dilute the conservative majority that exists today. So, Mr. Chairman, from our point of view, this is not going to work.
Well, we have a point of view, and our point of view as the Queen of England, or the South Carolina, what have you.
You can write all the articles you want to write. You can take all the shots at the conservative justices you want to take. You can picket before their houses. And it's not going to stop people from doing their job.
That's the problem, though. The job they're doing is a job they're doing on the people of the United States of America on behalf of people like Harlan Crow and the Federalist Society and the American Conservative Institute for Traditional Family Capitalist Values and Jesus. That's not the job a Supreme Court justice is supposed to do. Yes, and I think we just sent Flavio right up a tree, me and Lady G. Lady G, Flavio says, did he just say should have went? Yes, he said should have went. That is a perfect... Flavio, don't be a snob. That is a perfectly legitimate usage in places like South Carolina Stan and West Virginia Stan and Kentucky Stan. When we want to be emphatic about it, we say should have went. I know. It's colorful. It's picaresque.
This is an unseemly effort by the Democratic left to destroy the legitimacy of the Roberts Court. It's put people at risk.
Liar.
It's put their personal safety at risk.
Bullshit.
And if you want to talk about making the court a better institution, I'll be glad to work with in that regard. If you want to talk about destroying the court, count me out. And about conflicts of interest, Justice Kagan, who's a fine person.
Oh, and speaking of out, really, every time it's a Lady G quote now, I think it's we're obliged to say, fellas, come on. He's toxic. He's toxic to the LGBTQ community. It's time to out him. It really, really, really is.
Was the dean of Harvard Law School. She's raised $500 million for the law school. When she was dean, that's sort of her job. After she left, she's been trying to raise money for Harvard Law School. There's a case involving Harvard before the court. She's not going to recuse herself. And I'm not saying she should. I'm just saying there's a very...
Did Harvard give her $500,000 trip around the planet? Did they, Lady G? Just want to know, because somehow or another, this has been 5 minutes of palavering with not a single mention of what it is that is bothering people. Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed the second part of what Flavio said. Oh, how I despise well-educated, well-heeled Congress critters feigning folksiness drives me to distraction. Flavio, I don't think he's feigning. And I don't know how well, I don't know how well-educated or well-heeled Lady G is. He comes from wool hat country. Upstate. We joke about the fainting couch in the ancestral family home of smoldering chode, but no. I think he, now, on the other hand, John Kennedy down there in Louisianistan, he does know how to talk right good, but he doesn't specifically for the rubes back home. I think Lady G just talks like that. Should have went. Make no mistake, it drives me bananas too. I hate, you know what I hate it most of all? When members of my family do it. Sometimes I just have to walk out of the room. I mean, come on. This is me we're talking to here. You are. I mean, you got to remember, I had a friend. He's gone now. But he constantly bemoaned the trouble he had from his Carpenter's Tunnel syndrome. And he could throw me into spasms of linguistic vapors just by one use of the word tooken. Tooken, Flavio. Tooken. T-O-O-K-E-N. As in, maybe that feller wouldn't have died if he would have tooken his vaccine. Well, with a concise distillation of what we just heard in those 5 minutes of Lady G, Matt in San Francisco, Lindsay, we stolt and packed this court fair and square. Now, y'all just need to get with the program, pretend everything's on the up and up. Precisely. But that wasn't all. Oh, no. No, there are a number of barking and grunting freaks on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Among them being a guy who considers himself quite the Solon in his own right, a neo-maxi-zoom dweeby by the name of Josh Hawley, who we talked about in yesterday's program, who went to the Church of the Miraculous Toe Regeneration to talk about manly masculinity, manliness, and they had a repurposed Sherman tank or something that ran over some wrecked cars, and there was fire and loud heavy metal music instead of devil music in a church, no less. But today, Josh was all sober sides and okay.
Well, let's have a look at the Supreme Court's 2024 budget request. What do we see?
Yes, let's have a look at that. Because I can tell when a guy is pitching his voice lower for the sake of his masculinity. Well, let's have a look at that, Bill, and then back to Fred in the Weather Center.
It's getting harder to do that.
See, well, we see $4 million of requests for security funding from the CHIPS Act. $4 million. Then we see an additional $6 million of more security funding that the court is asking for. This is their 2024 budget request. The Supreme Court is asking for $4 million in security funding from one source and another $6 million over and above. 4 plus 6 equals 10. $10 million of security funding that the court is specifically...
Hey, you know, that's why he went to Yale and Stanford and shit. Because he can Johnny on the spot add up 6 and 4 equals 10 just like that. Don't even have to use a calculator.
Asking for this year in their budget request, and that just happens to be magically the exact same number that my Democrat colleagues want to deny the Supreme Court unless they stop their judicial recalcitrance and submit to the compulsion of this body.
So, oh, doesn't he sound so butch?
In other words, the threat is we will deny.
Oh, his wife probably just got pregnant listening to him. That's how masculine he is.
You secure it.
Even though he was shitting his pants and running for all he was worth on January the 6th, the other way, after having waved them on into the Capitol like some French woman during the siege of the Bastille.
Unless you do what we want. Let me say it again. We will deny you security unless you do what we want. We had an assassin come to the home of Justice Kavanaugh and...
An assassin came to the home of Justice Kavanaugh. See, here's the problem with the speech and debate clause of the Constitution. The speech and debate clause of the Constitution does not require a member of the national legislature, being a member of the Senate or the House of Representatives, to actually speak truthfully when they
declaim before the Senate. Well,
because that's a lie. An assassin did not come to the house of Brett Kavanaugh. He did not get anywhere near the house that was paid for by shadowy money, probably from Leonard Leo, that has never to this day been disclosed. And that's a problem. But the guy who did show up has been charged with attempted assassination of a Supreme Court justice or some such shit as that. When law enforcement wouldn't have caught him if he didn't stop long before he got to Brett Kavanaugh's house, call 911, and turned himself in.
I'm having some pretty bad thoughts, man. I came here and I thought I was going to hurt. I might have hurt Brett Kavanaugh, but I don't want to hurt Brett Kavanaugh.
Woo, 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 woo.
He tried to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh.
Lee in New York says, manly manliness, Josh Hawley, because you never know when insurrectionists are after you. Precisely. And Matt in San Francisco says, Mr. Josh sets off my gaydar something fierce. I wonder if he ever has to fly through Minneapolis on his way home to old Missouri. Sorry, Kenda. I have to throw a Missouri in there every now and then.
Try to murder him.
No, he never tried to murder him. Didn't take a single substantial step toward doing so. Don't know if the gun was loaded. But then again, let's also take note of the fact that Josh will fulminate here and pontificate and hoot and holler and, for all I know, start praying in tongues. But at no point in time will he ask the first question about why a guy who might not have been screwed down too tight was able to obtain a firearm with which to
murder Brett Kavanaugh.
We have had credible threats on the lives of other justices And now members of this
name them, dipshit.
Body say, we will deny you security for you, your families, your children, unless you do what we want.
Actually, it's not. And he's got more hand gestures going on than a doo-wop quartet in 1956.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Judge McKay.
Oh, yes, it's extraordinary.
Can I just ask you, longtime distinguished jurist, former attorney general of this country, do you think it's appropriate to threaten the security of justices of the United States and their families in order to get them to comply with the wishes of this body?
No.
Have you heard of something like this being done before?
I have not.
I haven't either. And I have.
That's Michael Mukasey. Not exactly a shining paragon of legal virtue. He was a Republican attorney general. Enough said.
I have to say, at a time when we have had three different credible assassination attempts or threats against justices, we still have people illegally going to the justices' homes to attempt to influence their decisions in cases.
No, they're not attempting to influence anything. That's bullshit. They are there to protest them because that's the only place that they can know that they might remotely be seen and heard. And they're not rioting. And this is what's called consequences. If you want to reduce half of the, or actually more than half of the population of this country to second-class citizens, don't expect them to sit quietly and go quietly to the gallows.
But man of masculinity Josh Hawley doesn't like that.
No one has been prosecuted for those violations. We have constant threats and danger to their children. We had radicals post publicly the school location of one of the justices' children. And in that context, to say that we will deny them millions of dollars in security funding.
Tell me about the security funding for the more than half of the people in this country who are now second-class citizens. Tell me about the security of a woman who finds out she's pregnant at 6 days, or at 6 weeks and 1 day. Tell me about that security. Hey, Josh Hawley, man of masculinity and manliness, tell me about the security of five people in Texas just trying to let their infant go to sleep. Tell me about their security. Tell me about the security of the kids at Uvalde or Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Tell me about the security of a 20-year-old girl just trying to turn around in a driveway because she's lost. Tell me about the security of a 16-year-old black young man trying to pick up his two twin brothers and have the wrong address. Tell me about that security. Oh, but I'm sorry, Supreme Court justices, especially Republican ones, well, they're much more dainty and deserving of protection. It's not like the Federalist Society doesn't have a list with at least, 200 names on it.
Unless they do what this body wants, I think is the height of irresponsibility.
He needs to stuff that because it's not what this body wants. It's what the American people want. There's a reason the Supreme Court of the United States' reputation is in a toilet. The toilet. A big toilet. That is plugged up and needs plunged and snaked and cleaned out. And a lot of this is preemptive because in the back of the mind of people like
man of masculinity, Josh Hawley,
he knows what the law is. The size of the Supreme Court is subject to the determination of the Congress of the United States. And if we ever get a responsible House and a decent majority in the Senate, we can do something about these thugs. who are acting against the will of the American people with almost every ruling they issue. It's disgusting.
And frankly, I can't believe that I'm seeing it. I guess it's just of a piece with what we've seen from the majority leader, who said that, what was it, Schumer, he said Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, that you will reap the whirlwind. Well, I guess we're reaping the whirlwind now, that they're just on their own unless this judicial recalcitrance stops. I hope that we don't have to see another.
What a turd. The judicial recalcitrance to which the letter refers was the judicial recalcitrance of ignoring a lawful request from the Senate Judiciary Committee. The old balls and strikes thumbing his nose at the Judiciary Committee. Once upon a time, one did that at one's hazard. Because the separation of powers was something considerably more real than it now is. Jeremy in Vermont, Josh Hawley, tell me again about the security that the Benghazi consulate asked for and you fucking Republicans denied, and then after the attack proceeded to attack Hillary Clinton time after time when you fucking pricks caused the lack of security. Well, there's that, Jeremy. Aren't they just a petulant little lot? They can't win on the issues, so all they can do is bark and grunt and hoot and carry on. About how unfair it is, and you're trying to get Brett Kavanaugh killed. And the judicial recalcitrance stuff comes from the letter that old Balls and Strikes sent. The letter that he sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee, which he claims was signed off upon. You heard that. Lady G said, all the members of the court signed off on this. I'm looking at the letter. It is addressed to Durbin, White House, Coons, Hirono, Padilla, Welch, Feinstein, Klobuchar, Blumenthal, Booker, and Ossoff. It is not directed in any way, shape, form, or fashion to the Republicans. Just the Democrats. I am writing in response to your letter dated April 27th, 2023. The justices subscribed to the statement on ethics, principles, and practices on April 25th, 2023. Isn't that convenient? It reaffirms ethics, principles, and practices that have long guided members of the Supreme Court whose name weren't Thomas. Oh, I added that last part. The justices previously subscribed to statements concerning ethics, principles, and practices in 1991 and twice in 1993. There are no set rules for the consideration or adoption of a resolution. The 2023 statement and the 1991 and 93 resolutions were unanimous. The 93 statement of recusal policy was signed by 7 justices, all of the then active justices except for Justices Blackmun and Souter, with no recorded dissents. And again, he says, as with any issue that may require research, justices consult a wide variety of guidance on ethics issues, including statutes, judicial opinions, advice from judicial conference committees, the court's legal office, scholarly commentary, historical practice, including witch burning. Oh, I added the witch burning. Sorry, that was the wrong opinion. That was the Dobbs opinion. A letter of inquiry from the Committee on Financial Disclosure may trigger a variety of appropriate responses from a filer. May. Oh, May is doing a lot of work there. May kind of sucks here. Do you know that between now and noon tomorrow, elevations above 3,000 feet in three West Virginia counties are expecting a foot of snow? Ah, May. May trigger a variety of appropriate responses from a filer. Sometimes the additional information provided by the filer resolves the concern raised by the committee with no further action. Other times, the filer may choose or be advised to file an amended report. I'm not aware of any instances in which a justice and the committee failed to resolve any issues that led to an inquiry, and given the history of resolving such issues, I am not aware of penalties that have been imposed on justices for failure to abide by principles or practices recited in the statement, but the statute provides that the judicial conference shall refer the name of a filer to the Attorney General for willful failure to report required information. See, that's the problem when lawyers write laws, especially when lawyers write laws affecting lawyers and judges. Did you catch that last part? Shall refer for willful failure.
Well, I didn't think it was willful of me not to report the $500,000 trip me and Ginsurrectionist took around.
Well, of course not, it wasn't. You're in the clear. But what I said earlier when we were talking about Josh Hallenass and how it's a pity that members of Congress are not at least marginally required to attempt to be truthful, this is that too. This letter is signed respectfully, Squiggle. I presume that squiggle is spells balls and stripes. J. Although it might actually be some sort of post-Picasso cubist scrawl. But the other eight justices did not sign that letter. Lady G, like he has about his entire life, is lying. Because Lady G is a liar. Funny how that works. And in a just world, and why do I even bother? There would be consequences for such judicial hubris as old Balls and Strikes displayed there. Again, why bother? But just because he was writing letters to the Senate Judiciary Committee didn't mean that there was no time for the Supreme Court of the United States to fuck America some more. Yesterday, our dread sovereign, most puissant Supreme Catholic Majesties decided they didn't want to hear a challenge based upon the First Amendment and, you know, some sincerely held religious beliefs about a law coming out of Talibandiana that was signed into effect by none other than then-governor of Talibandiana, Mike Pence, that geek. This time it had to do with remains. And like anything that this maggoty court does, its primary purpose was to make women miserable. A women's health care center in Talibandianapolis and two women who had abortions there sued in regard to a statute signed in 2016 that requires clinics to cremate or bury tissue from abortions or spontaneous abortions. This Reuters story uses the wholly inaccurate term miscarriages. Instead of sending the tissue to a medical incinerator. It almost makes you wonder if the Supreme Court of the United States understands what a crematorium's all about. It's one of the things that kind of creeps me out about getting cremated. That thing of ashes, that urn that you get, and I'm not trying to trigger anybody or hurt anybody's feelings, but it ain't necessarily all your loved ones. Flesh does burn. Bones, for the most part, do not. And they can't send you home with an ossuary. That's a box of bones. No, once they've gotten done with your loved one, they scrape whatever's in the tray that isn't bones into the urn. Some of that might have been, you know, Aunt Edna. Others might be other flakes of ash, might be a little bit of, you know, peepaw. Or, in some cases, Fido. Here's your loved one. The bones, they run through a grinder. You know, what the giant said, Jack and the Beanstalk, I'll grind your bones to make my bread. Yeah, that. And so the state of Talibandiana said that the tissue that comes from an abortion clinic has to be either cremated or buried, but cannot be incinerated. On the other hand, however, the person who has just had the abortion can get the Santorum treatment and take it home in a little Ziploc bag. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. The Supreme Court did not even want to hear this issue litigated. The maggot attorney general of Talibandiana, a creep named Todd Rokita, who tried to torment a licensed physician in Talibandiana and threatened her with criminal prosecution for performing an abortion on a raped 12-year-old who had to flee to Talibandiana from Ohio. Well, Todd Rokita said, The purpose, the statute means to ensure the respectful disposition of human remains, or they can take it home in a Ziploc bag. I guess the same thing does not apply to, like, appendixes, which in some instances are substantially larger than a fetus. Right? Kind of makes me wonder what happened down in... Never mind, Robin, shut up. So the Supreme Court said, well, we don't even want to hear this. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals said, no, you got to make the woman take it home in a Ziploc bag or make the abortion clinic pay to cremate it or bury it. And it's so cruelly dumb, so psychotically vicious. Hopefully somebody in Talibandiana has wised up and added, you know, because I'm sure there's a sign on the thing that says medical incinerator, and somebody, I don't know, took a Sharpie and wrote, and crematorium, done. But the Supreme Court didn't give a damn in this instance because this was brought under the First Amendment. As compulsory religious speech, that Talibandiana says that an embryo or a fetus is a person. See the rule against perpetuities earlier. I don't just do things here. And that in so doing, violated their moral and their religious beliefs by treating embryonic tissue the same way that they would treat a deceased, fully functioning, fully formed human being. And in fact, when the case was tried before U.S. District Judge Richard Young, he said, "Yup, the plaintiff's religious freedom and free speech rights have been trampled." But then the considerably more maggoty 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals got hold of it and said, "No, that's a precious little fetus. This is. Your court in action." It's funny, the Reuters story that I'm looking at came with a poll at the bottom. Do you think they made the right decision? I clicked wrong decision. 51% said wrong decision. 38% the right decision. 9% weren't sure. Who are, and 3% had no opinion. So that 12%, why did they even read the story? Anybody?
What's this about? Cremation? What?
But that's not all. Oh, no. I mentioned yesterday that the handmaid would be receiving an emergency petition from the lawful gun owner and gun seller in Naperville, Illinois. I know, when I say Illinois, it makes people's skin crawl. You have to understand, I grew up listening to people where I grew up say Illinois, and of course, Massachusetts. I have no idea how to spell Massachusetts, and I apologize to every Massachusettsian in the Horn Family Community Congregation for that. I know it hurts. But no, they're trying to do something in Illinois about the proliferation of weapons of war. You know, assault rifles. Which, of course, calling them assault rifles gives all the gun humpers who think their rights are more important than the right of a 9-year-old to become a 10-year-old, oh, it gives them a terrible, terrible sad, "You don't know nothing about guns! Or my feelings!" So Naperville, Illinois, passed a city ordinance that is structurally similar to a law that was passed by the state of Illinois and signed into law that bans the sale and possession of certain semi-automatic rifles and magazines. Well, the handmaid told the city of Naperville that they've got until May the 8th to better explain themselves why they would act to try to save the lives of, I don't know, kids in schools. The lawsuit was filed by the NAGGR, National Association for Gun Rights, and National fucking Gun Recidivists, National Foundation for Gun Rights, and the president of NAGGR is Dudley Brown.
"We're thankful the Supreme Court is taking the Second Amendment rights of Illinoisans seriously. Any ban on so-called assault weapons is plainly unconstitutional, and now it is on the city of Naperville to explain the legal justification for their ban. Of course, there isn't any."
Because saving the lives of 9-year-olds is not a justification for giving a sad to pasty-faced, doughy white dudes.
The bans were ludicrous from the start, and if Illinois had any sense, they would wave the white flag now and save us all some time.
You know, I wouldn't want to wave a flag in front of those people. They wouldn't honor a flag. They'd start shooting. So this will probably be another god-awful opportunity for the Supreme Court of the United States to make this place not a little, but a lot less safe. Halfway into the program, $80 to raise to... Now, I haven't mentioned this since the beginning of the program. I hope this isn't too soon. $80 to raise to complete Bruce and Karen's memorial challenge. Max took care of two-thirds of it. We raised $20 last night, $80 to go. There's actually 300 more. It's 380. But if we can just raise the 80, we'll deal with the next 300 whenever. But Bruce and Karen's memorial challenge is brought to us by Ralphs, who is there so often every night, tries to keep nights from being a goose egg. And by Chris in Germany, who offered up a challenge just last week to help us get to the end of April. And an anonymous friend. And it's a shame to let it just sit there. Backtracking a little bit, Darlene in Connecticut said, I caught the De Gaulle pun too. Not bad. Maybe it's a lawyer thing. Speaking of which, I suffered PTSD from learning about the rule against perpetuities in law school to the point where I needed to have a rule against perpetuities. I indeed have a rule against perpetuities. Translation, amnesia. I have utterly forgotten any and everything I tried to learn about it. In the interview, the Wall Street Journal piece claiming he and others on the SCOTUS have been targeted for assassination. Well, Alito sounds a bit, I don't know, hysterical. Such a victim he is. He's so persecuted. Never mind that he eagerly and demonically penned a decision that essentially lines up for attempted assassination women of childbearing years. You know, women in their prime, per Don Lemon. And people who can get pregnant because they can't make the necessary medical decision to abort their pregnancy in order to save their very life. I am now a Sheldon Whitehouse fangirl, having subscribed to his YouTube channel. Along with my two senators, he continues to undress the SCOTUS and reveal it for the utterly corrupt branch of government that it is. And I thought that Clarence had long played his this is a high-tech lynching card 35 years ago. Boy, was I naive. He didn't have to play it at all. Cornyn and Cruz did it for him during today's hearing. I loved how Ossoff revealed Judge McCasey for the dirtbag he is, too. He took gifts, too, and the BS that he wouldn't want to insult a wealthy friend by refusing his offer to ride on his personal jet to whatever, wherever, was hilarious. Darlene, honest to God, they're not very good at it. Maybe that's because they know they don't have to be good at it. You know what I mean? They don't even have to make a pretense of it anymore because they know that any trouble begins in the House and they are safe. The one thing that's sincere, and granted, this is before the news of Fappy's $500,000 vacation and his little real estate transaction with his owner, friend, Harlan Crow, came out. But it's another one of those instances where practicing politics from a position of fear never results in a good outcome. Ever. We had the House. We had something resembling the Senate. And I don't think everyone is quite as brazen as Nitwit Nero is. Maybe Fappy and Ginsurrectionist are. But it would have been nice to find out. And I'm still waiting. And maybe this just marks me out as naive, but I am still waiting to find out why it is that we have Democratic members of the House of Representatives who talk about Clarence Thomas should be impeached and won't even file the bill. Honestly, I think if Sheldon Whitehouse was in the House of Representatives and not the Senate, he would have long since filed the bill. But he is bound to have friends in the House who trust him and believe him. And all I can guess is that it's fear. Because people have called for FAPI's impeachment, but won't file the bill. Because they're scared to death that they will be out-messaged by the right wing, and that the hue and cry of the Josh Holland asses and Miss Lindsay's of the world will somehow drown out any legitimate criticism or discussion of why this must be done, and because it is the only remedy for a crooked judge. And that's the other thing I want to hear. I want to hear somebody say, Fappy Thomas is as crooked as a dog's hind leg. See, if we had any Democratic members of the House who were Southern, that'd sound real good.
I just want to tell y'all that Justice Thomas is, in my considered opinion, crooked as a dog's hind leg.
It would have some, it would get some legs that way. Or a Southern woman. I'm telling you, God bless him. He can't help it. He's as crooked as a dog's hind leg. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much for that. The French had the gall. Oof. Yeah. Whoa! Holy cow! Mark, thank you so much. Bruce and Karen's challenge is met. And so is today's fundraising goal. It's a Have a Show on Me Plus. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much. And now I will hush about fundraising for the remainder of the program. Thank you. I cannot express it enough. Thank you. Because frankly, I got my Appalachian power bill today. I think these people are just making it up as they go along now. Paid them last week. Got a thing in the mail today saying, we want more! Girl could be forgiven to think maybe somebody spliced the line and I'm paying their bill too. But I don't think we got anybody around here sharp enough to do that. Hey, Suman. Suman, right there. I pronounced Phoenix as Phonix until I landed here and the immigration officer corrected me. I imagine everyone was laughing behind my back. Wikipedia pronunciations were not a thing at the time in 2001, so y'all don't have to feel bad. They help some sometimes. Thanks, Suman. You got to admit, and the same guy who said Tooken and talked about his Carpenter's Tunnel syndrome. Also, when we were planning for anything, he'd say, now, Robin, we got to make preservations. And so to this day, in this household, kind of in his memory, we make preservations. I was never entirely certain what work preservations was supposed to be doing. It was never a dull moment around him. He had a terrible fear of snakes. He referred to all serpents merely as him. And I had hired him at one point to work on the old Haney place. And he saw about a 6-foot-long black snake just sort of draped over the lintel of the cellar door. Turn came to me and said, "Robin, I saw him. I'm done." And he sure enough was, and that left it to me to deal with him. Him. Then there was the day he put in my electric fence for my garden. Felt real good about having it all wired up and went into the garage, plugged it up, walked back out, said, "Stand back, Robin," and licked his thumb and his index finger and just grabbed that top wire. It works. I ran and unplugged it when I realized what he was about to do, but it was a good 20, 25 feet away, so he wanted to test it. Probably where he got the carpenter's tunnel syndrome. I miss him, honestly. Yeah, what's that, Jeremy? Jeremy says, these not sure poll takers are as annoying as the people who claimed on the day before the 2020 election. They just weren't sure who they would vote for president. And I say it's bullshit, and they just don't dare say it. Well, some of those, you know, the people who say, "I don't really know. I won't know till I get there." Those people are just assholes. Because they think they're being clever and skewing the poll. And okay. And a little bit of a story update. You remember the woman who was principal of that right-wing classical liberal arts high school in Florida that later got its trademark pulled or whatever over one of the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, toenail-clipping, toothpicking parents who said, "I don't want my child to see that 15-foot-tall statue of that naked Italian." You know, the David. Well, it's got kind of a happy ending. Hope Karaskia, who was driven out of her job, received an invitation from the folks in Florence, Italy. And so they got there. The David weighs 5 tons. 1.7 million people see David every year. Some of them even take note of the fact that I don't think that David's really Jewish. And she and her family had a lovely time. And so this week they're seeing Florence, and God, I'd love to see Florence again. Oh, it was Tallahassee Classical School, as licensed by Hillsborough College. It was all about Renaissance art, and the children also saw the creation of Adam on the from the Sistine ceiling, and they saw Botticelli's Birth of Venus, often referred to by some as Venus on the Half Shell. And the gallery director Cecile Holberg said, "I am happy to be able to welcome her and introduce her to the beauties of our museum. Besides showing her the David, a sculpture that I repeat, as I have said, has nothing to do with pornography, it's a masterpiece. It represents a religious symbol of purity and innocence, the victory of good over evil." You know, like when Joe Biden beat Nitwit Nero. And she went on and said, "Well, he's naked because it's the Renaissance. And in the Renaissance, put man at the center of attention." And the funniest part of it all is she lost her job, Ms. Karakia did, for showing her a statue. 50% of the visitors who see it in person are from the new 90 states of Merca. Director Holberg said, I am sure that Ms. Karakia will find here in Florence the welcome and the solidarity that she deserves. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher jumped in, helping out as I'm able to. Thank you, Christopher. I'll actually apply that to tomorrow. Thank you so much. And Ralph said, thanks. Thanks, Mark. Thank you. Those are little miracles, at least as far as I'm concerned. And, of course, we had the continuing trial of Nitwit Nero that Nitwit Nero is not there for. And today featured one of her friends testifying that, yes, in 1996, within minutes of what happened to her, she called and said to her friend E. Jean Carroll, you were raped. Also today, Judge Kaplan, Judge Lewis Kaplan, asked Trump's pettifogger, Joe Takapenis, what he expected to put on for his case in chief, and he said, I just got one expert witness. Judge Kaplan said, so Mr. Trump's not going to be coming? Correct, said lawyer Takapenis. Judge Kaplan said, well, it's his call. I understand that. You understand that. He understands that. Also today, another witness, came forward and said that Nitwit Nero groped her during a flight to New York in 1979. Jessica Leeds, she had mentioned that in 2016 to the New York Times. She got bumped up to first class from her economy seat and wound up sitting next to Nitwit Nero on the stand. She said, when I got up there and sat down, the gentleman sitting by the window introduced himself as Donald Trump. We shook hands. Ms. Leeds was 37 at the time. What happened was they served a meal and it was cleared and we were sitting there when all of a sudden Trump decided to kiss me and grope me. It was out of the blue. It was like a tussle. He was trying to kiss me. He was trying to pull me towards him. He was grabbing my breasts. It was like he had 40 million hands. It was when he started putting his hand up my skirt that gave me a jolt of strength. She got loose and went storming back to her seat in the back of coach. She said, it never occurred to me to yell out. E. Jean Carroll's lawyer said, why not? And she said, I don't know. I didn't tell anybody at work because I didn't think they would be interested in my experience. At that time, in that place, in the work environment, men could basically get away with a lot. But then when Nitwit Nero ran for president, she said, I started off telling my family, telling my children, telling my friends, my neighbors, my book club, anyone and everyone who would listen to me. I thought he was not the kind of person we wanted as president. Then, 3 years after it happened, God, this man! She was giving out table assignments at a gala at Saks Fifth Avenue for the Humane Society of New York. And she saw Nitwit Nero again. And that's when he looked at her and said, and she was with, and Nitwit Nero at the time was with Now, this is 3 years after 1979, so we're in the early 80s. There's nothing about running for president. He looked at, she said, he looked at me and he said, "I remember you. You're that cunt from the airplane." She said it was like a bucket of cold water thrown over my head. And I hate everything that goes with this. Joe Takapinas queried and said, "Fair to say you can't name one witness who saw what happened to you? Not a single person can corroborate your story?" Jessica Leeds said, "That's correct." So then there was a redirect examination, and Michael Ferrara, a lawyer for E. Jean Carroll, said, "You making this up because you hate Donald Trump?" And Jessica Leeds looked right at him and said, "No, I'm not making this up." And then the question was put forward. And every woman who goes through anything like this eventually deals with this question, and it's why there is so much silence around sexual assault. Why didn't you tell anybody? Why didn't you tell your boss? It was on a business trip. And Jessica Leeds said, "If I had gone in and complained about what had happened, my feeling was my boss would say to me, 'That's really too bad. How about lunch?'" And she said, "I didn't want sympathy. I wanted this job. It was a good paying job." And with regard to E. Jean Carroll, he famously defamed her by saying,
"She's not my type."
when she and Ivana at this, or she and Marla Maple at the Maples at the same time, it could have been twins. And when confronted with Jessica Leeds' account, well, the jury got to see a clip of Nitwit Nero in the campaign trail in 2016 saying,
"She would not be my first choice."
And it was Lisa Birnbach who testified that, yes, E. Jean Carroll called her within 5 to 7 minutes of the attack at Bergdorf Goodman. "She told me that Donald Trump recognized her outside or right in the doorway of Bergdorf Goodman. He asked her to help him shop and assaulted her upstairs in a dressing room." Lisa Birnbach said, "I thought it was kind of nutty that she would go to the lingerie department with Trump." Lisa Birnbach continued, "I just spent a few days with him." She was down at Mar-a-Lardass for a piece she wrote for New York Magazine about it. She said, "He didn't strike me as dangerous." But she recounted what E. Jean Carroll had told her. "He slammed his whole arm, pinned her against the wall with his arm and shoulders, and with his free hand pulled down her tights. And E. Jean said to me many times, 'He pulled down my tights, he pulled down my tights,' almost like she couldn't believe it had happened to her." And as soon as she said that, even though I knew my children didn't know the word, I ducked out of the room and I whispered, "E. Jean, he raped you. You should go to the police." And she said, "No, no, I don't want to go to the police." And then she told Lisa Birnbach, "Promise me you'll never speak of this again and promise me that you will tell no one." And I promised her both of those things. Meanwhile, a former Bergdorf Goodman executive, a man named Robert Salerno, said, "No, there were no security cameras on the sixth floor lingerie department. And yes, I have seen Trump shop in the store." Somehow or another, this guy may wind up being the Republican nominee or President of the United States. On redirect, speaking to Lisa Birnbach, Sean Crowley, another of her attorneys, said, "When Miss Carroll had called you in 1996 and told you he had just assaulted her, was he a political figure?" Lisa Birnbach said, not at all. Donald Trump in 1996 was a well-known New York person. He was not in politics. He was not near politics. He was a guy who liked publicity and attention, and he was also a known womanizer. My friend wasn't raped by a president. She was assaulted by a guy, a real estate guy. And they wrapped up the day. They wrapped up the day with expert testimony from a clinical psychologist, and she said it was her expert opinion that E. Jean Carroll was harmed. She has suffered from painful, intrusive memories for many years. She endured a diminishment in how she thought and felt about herself. And perhaps most prominently, she manifests very notable avoidance symptoms, which have curtailed her romantic and intimate life and caused profound loss. That's the damages portion of this trial. Good news, at least for the moment. This just in from Planned Parenthood's the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. The Third Judicial District Court for Salt Lake County, Utah, blocked the implementation of HB 467, a new law that would functionally eliminate access to abortion in that state starting tomorrow by granting abortion providers requests for a preliminary injunctions. HB 467 bans abortion care from being provided anywhere but at a hospital, even though abortion remains legal up until 18 weeks of pregnancy. Because licensed clinics rather than hospitals provide over 95% of abortions in Utah, and Planned Parenthood Association of Utah health centers are not presently licensed as hospitals, this law amounts to a functional abortion ban across the state. The court made a specific finding that the law likely violates the Utah Constitution by banning abortion at licensed abortion clinics but allowing it at hospitals because outpatient clinics provide abortion care just as safely and at far lower cost than hospitals. A little victory. For now. For now. About Jessica Leeds being bumped up to first class, Darlene in Connecticut says, I'd love to know the circumstances surrounding her getting bumped up to first class. I wonder if Trump saw her on or boarding the plane and targeted her, paying for her upgrade to conveniently sit next to his ugly ass. That would be too much to think for a normal, you know, for a normal's only a setting on a dryer. But for a sociopath, that's how a sociopath works, isn't it, Darlene? Seems to me. Suman, on the David, we saw David a couple of years ago with our then 9-year-old daughter. She made an observation that David was looking quite seriously towards the line outside the museum, and therefore they must all purchase a ticket and make sure they follow the line rules. Otherwise, David might come at them with the two stones and a slingshot. It's been 3 years now. No comments about the penis still. I'll be back. I'll report back when and if she tells me something. Nobody's picked. No. You got, in order to think something that is facially neutral is dirty, you got to have a dirty mind. Objecting to a kid seeing the David is a confession of the filthy mind of the person making the complaint. Oh, and some upcoming litigation. Oh, dear God. This one out of Michigan. Goes back to early 2022. At the beginning of the Let's Go Brandon craze. You'll notice, I mean, the Let's Go Brandon flags are pretty well faded in most maggot yards now. Got a couple around here. And that's because the meme got stolen and turned into Dark Brandon, as evinced at the Nerd Prom in D.C. Saturday night. In 2022, a couple of students arrived at Tri-County Middle School in Michigan and they were both wearing Let's Go Brandon sweatshirts. Later that day, an administrator and a teacher at the middle school said that that was too much and made the boys take off the shirts. Now, the barking and grunting is that the students were unconstitutionally subjected to viewpoint discrimination. That's what it said in a lawsuit that another one of these tax-exempt grifts filed on behalf of the two boys. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, FIRE. Most of the time, FIRE works on the college level. But they got involved with this case because it has important First Amendment implications. That's funny. Because I'm so old, I can remember when a bunch of high school students got kicked out of school, suspended, for displaying a banner on a parade route for dim leader. They weren't even on school property or on school time. The banner read, "Bong hits for Jesus." It didn't even say, "Fuck George W. Bush," or "Let's go Bushy." Bong hits for Jesus. Pretty obscure as a protest goes, but guess what? The court sided with the school. We can't have kids running around saying, "Bong hits for Jesus." Fire pettifogger Connor Fitzpatrick said, "The slogan exists as a way to express an anti-Biden message without using profanity. Criticism of the president is core political speech protected by the First Amendment." Something tells me these two boys probably couldn't spell First and Amendment if you spotted them F-A-F-I-R-S-T-A-M-E-N-D-M-E-N. But and here we are. Fire is grunting and braying and barking and hooting that the school district is being discriminatory because they wouldn't let those poor boys wear their Let's Go Brandon shirts, but students are allowed to wear gay pride clothing. And then the USA Today article says the school is standing its ground. Really? They pulled guns? And the school district has said everybody and their cousin knows that Let's Go Brandon is another way of saying fuck Biden. There is no end to the right-wing outrage, is there? None. Zero. So let's pop over and find out what the audio's like on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin. It's your Hoosier Whisperer.
Hoosier Whisperer?
Yes.
Hey, Dave.
You mentioned the dread attorney private of Indiana, Todd Rokita.
Yes.
You know, the guy who's just marking time until he gets a consulting gig outside of his office door. Yeah, that guy. This guy's a fucking moron. He's run for federal office several times, and he's so far to the right, even the Republicans look over and go, no, no. But I was the, you know, I tuned in right about the time John Ass was bloviating. And it occurred to me that I saw somewhere where there is a new folk group in the Senate of the United States made up of Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, and Lady G. And they'll be performing at the Log Closet Republican Convention. The group's name, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Please.
Oh, for shame. The, for shame.
I know.
But at least it didn't ruin in, at least it didn't, at least it didn't ruin anybody's dinner.
Yet.
Oh no.
We have to legally put the yet in. I'm still on the air. But I have joyous news. Christine is triumphantly returning to her abode tomorrow.
Yay.
She is done with her classes. She's tired of dealing with the 80 and 90-year-old misogynists that are there. One guy, African-American gentleman, and I use the term gentleman advisedly, demanded to make contact with the Chicago media because he was going to be running for president. And Christine pointed out to him that merely by saying such a thing, he'd have to spend $5,000 on his campaign to make it legitimate in the eyes of the Federal Election Commission. And he told her, and I quote, "You don't know what you're talking about. You're just a woman."
And there we go.
This did not sit well with our girl. As you know, she called me and, oh my God, Robin, I just meekly listened, and when I said something, I told her, I said, "Don't hit anybody. You're in a federal reservation." "I know I am. Oh God, I caught hell. I should, after all these years, Robin, I should have known better." But she is coming home tomorrow. She was not happy the entire time she was there. And she'll be going back at some point to work on her computer skills. And she was explaining how they were teaching her Braille. And she's up to her numbers now. And I knew a woman who could sight read Braille, which is very weird, but I went to school with some blind kids, excuse me. But I think she's going to be just fine, because we're going to eventually celebrate my birthday here next week or so. And because I lost my phone a while back, I'm still resetting up everything with PayPal and my streaming services. And it's a damn mess. But as far as the trial going on in New York, I don't think lawyer Tacopina is doing himself any favors. I mean, he's coming off like, was it John Gotti's former defense attorney, Cutler? I mean, that's the kind of this guy. And he stopped being Gotti's lawyer when the FBI caught a wiretap where Gotti was complaining about his fees. So the federal prosecutor moved to have Gotti's lawyer removed because he had a complaint against his lawyer, which the judge granted. And eventually, Gotti was convicted. Oh, lovely. And people wonder why lawyers are so well trusted and admired.
Tongue firmly in cheek.
Well, you know, when lawyers are less respected than garbage men, you know.
Respect. I deeply appreciate my waste removal professionals.
Well, they serve a vital function in society.
Absolutely. And it is hard work.
Yeah. Oh, it's extremely hard work. And some have died doing that work. And if they hadn't, Dr. King wouldn't have been in Memphis. But, it's just the longer this goes on, the more I hear about the kinds of skeevy crap he pulled before he was even thinking about running for president. Because the last couple of times he ran for president was not the first time he ran.
No,
he followed Jagir's Perot into the Freedom Party or whatever it was called, and got their nomination. And now, evidently,
yeah, that was what 2012.
He still thinks he can something like that. I think it might have even been 2008. I think it was 2008, but this guy just can't let go of anything except ex-wives. I mean, you know, I find it ironic that his first wife ended up at the bottom of the stairway. Kind of reminds me of a certain Lord Robert Dudley. Back in Queen Elizabeth's first time.
Oh dear, it's been.
His wife,
I don't know if we've ever had a Lord Robert Dudley reference on this program, but it's damned well past time.
Well, his wife Amy was found dead at the bottom of the stairway.
You sure her name wasn't Ivana?
No, it's ironic that there was some question about whether he was going to divorce his wife and marry Elizabeth. Well, he was one of her favorites, and so the talk around the court was that, yeah, he was going to divorce his wife Amy and then marry the queen. Well, after she was found dead, and she had been alone in the house. She had sent her servants off to the local fair for the day. And, they were like, well, you need us here. And she goes, no, I'll be all right. And there was some question about whether it was a suicide or just a tragic accident or if it was murder. And so there was an inquest. And Elizabeth had to stay the fuck away from, get as far away from it as possible.
Oh, I should think.
So she ordered that they dig down through to see what actually happened. It wasn't one of these, well, cover it up and then, well, no. It wasn't one of these, well, the queen would like this to happen. afterward, he was cleared by the inquest. But the stench of what happened had stayed with him the rest of his life. And she distanced herself from him, including moving his apartments away from hers. And sending him away from court for a while. So that's what makes me wonder, you know, if something shady might not have been going on, because I remember hearing a report that there was a cup of coffee that hadn't gotten spilled. No.
Yeah, the cup of coffee didn't move.
That sounds a little... Yeah, but then, you know, if Christine owned the golf course, the last place I would want to be buried is on the goddamn golf course so he could get a tax break. Jesus. Because they can't tax that property now that it's considered a cemetery.
Right.
Yeah.
History doesn't repeat. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
So, when I heard that report, I immediately thought of Robert Dudley, because similarities are just too damned eerie, Robin. And that's History Corner with David Levine. Tune in next week.
And a damn fine History Corner it was.
Thank you.
And when Dudley finally remarried, he remarried a woman named Lettuce. He waited.
A woman named who?
Lettuce.
Lettuce.
Lettice. Lettuce. Lettuce Nollies. Probably pronounced Lettice, but it looks like lettuce on the page.
Oh, my God. I didn't know he remarried. See, I learned something new every day. But, this, you know, I think the media is making a big mistake.
How so?
Trump can't win. I seem to remember hearing that in 2016, too. You know. Oh, Hillary's got this in the bag. No. We need to treat him like the threat that he actually is. And we need to do more. I know people are tired of him, but if we've got to keep running against him until the dumbass is in the ground, then so be it. Now, I think, in all honesty, I think President Biden is much better equipped to handle an asshole like Trump than Hillary was. And you know his advisors have learned from 2016, but my question is not whether they have learned their lesson, it's whether the rest of the country has. I mean, some of these bank failures were started by a bunch of libertarians fucking pulling their money out of banks and blaming the Biden administration. And as far as the gutless wonder known as the Speaker of the House, well, he's bloviating in Israel and holding the nation hostage. I once heard this kind of tactic referred to as holding it under your own head and saying, if you try to stop me, I'll shoot. They don't give a damn, folks. They want to burn everything down and blame
you,
us.
And you mentioned the Republic Bank fiasco. There was some dirty business there. Where'd it go?
What did I catch on a story thread there, Robin?
Yeah, you did, and I can't. There was a story just before airtime. There were five House members who quickly and conveniently bailed on Republic Bank right before it shit the bed. And I'm looking for it now. I could have sworn I clicked on it. Dang it. Let me look here then. Well, I don't know where it went. Damn it. Oh, well. But, there were five House Democrats, not House Democrats, there were five House members who went, oh, no, I'm out of here. And I could have, maybe I saved it somewhere else. Okay, not that.
Well, all I got to say is that's a dirty bit of business. I mean, that should be investigated like insider trading.
Yeah.
Because it's nothing but a manipulation. And there are federal laws against that sort of thing. You know, whether it's an investment advisory service putting out a message, oh, pull your money from this, you know. It's no worse than, or it's no better than a pump and dump stock scheme. And you know.
Ah, there it is. There it is.
Oh, well.
Oh, wait. No, I can't get to it. Never mind. Paywall. Oh, this is funny, though, since we've been talking about a bunch of law stuff this evening. You know, last week, Leon Scum's Dick Rocket experienced an unplanned catastrophic disassembly. It blew the fuck up.
In other words, it blew it up.
Well, a senior attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity by the name of Jared Margolis said, it is vital we protect life on Earth even as we look to the stars in this modern era of spaceflight. Federal officials should defend vulnerable wildlife and frontline communities, not give a pass to corporate interests that want to use treasured coastal landscapes as a dumping ground for space waste. So the Center for Biological Diversity, the American Bird Conservancy, Surfrider Foundation, Save RGV, and the Carrizo Comecrudo Nation of Texas are suing the FAA and Billy Nolan. He's getting ready to bail out of the FAA for letting Leon Scum conduct 20 rocket launches over the next 5 years. In the suit papers, they said, for the sake of future generations, let's protect the healthy habitats we have left instead of treating them as waste places for pollution and fuselage. Fuselage.
The thing of it is, NASA does a much better job of dealing with that because Cape Canaveral is on the Florida coast. It's in the swamp.
That's not like swamps are lifeless.
There are anti-climbing fences around certain buildings at Cape Canaveral because of climbing alligators. Yes, alligators can climb into trees and things like that. And to counter that and to protect people,
alligators can also be used as a threatening weapon when Florida man decides to rob a liquor store, as I mentioned. Because that was a thing that happened. But no, the Center for Biological Diversity is a serious organization, and they do good work. They've done amazing work helping to protect what can be protected here in matters relating to mountaintop removal. And in the matter where Leon Scum blew up his dick rocket, it turns out that the region is home and host to piping plovers, northern aplomato falcons, Gulf Coast jaguarundi, ocelots, Kemp's Ridley sea turtles. And the damn launch site is right next door, state and federal conservation park and recreation lands. And Mary Angela Branch, board member at Save the Rio Grande Valley, said the administration's failure to fully analyze the dangers of a rocket test launch and manufacturing facility mere steps from the Lower Rio Grande National Wildlife Refuge and two state parks is an astonishingly bad decision. So many threatened and endangered species are counting on the agency to get this right.
Sounds to me like they ought to bring NASA into this suit, because wasn't the Dick Rocket being launched as a test platform for a NASA mission?
Yeah. Yeah.
That he gotten paid for?
The Dick Rocket will eventually carry us to the moon, they say.
You know, I always dreamed of going into space, but after seeing how slapdash some of the stuff is with the various billionaire flight clubs, I think I want to keep my feet firmly on terra firma.
Well, I sure don't want to. I don't want to go to any libertarian paradise that Leon Scum is running.
Oh, now, Robin, you mean to tell me that space surfing doesn't just thrill you? I mean,
indentured spacitude.
30, 40 years in a low-gravity, high-radiation environment? What's not to love? I mean, let's face it.
You kind of
30 minutes for a radio broadcast. But
you kind of walked on my pun there, Dave. Indentured spacitude.
Sorry.
Indentured spacitude.
Well, there is that.
Tough crowd.
But, you know, well, then, look what happened to indentured servitude in the British colonies. That turned into chattel slavery in not too long at all.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, you know, Leon Scum being a famously libertarian soul, I would expect, nerd that he is, that somewhere along the way he read Robert A. Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, which is a far better libertarian screed than anything ever, ever penned by that woman with no editor, Ayn Rand.
The woman that once told Johnny Carson that families were a useless institution? Yeah, that one.
That sounds like her. And the woman who deplored welfare until she ran through all her money and needed it to survive in her old age. Yeah, that Ayn Rand. Dave, I got to run. Christine's home tomorrow, right?
Right.
Well, you tell the minute she gets home, you tell her we are so glad.
I will. As a matter of fact, I've got to call her right as soon as we get off the call.
Well, that sounds good. You have a wonderful evening, okay?
All right. And take care of yourself. And I didn't ruin anybody's dinner tonight.
No. I got 25 and a half minutes left, though. So no, the Pacific Daylight Time Zone is not safe.
All right, but at least I'm not at fault. So
no, this one's going to be on me.
All right.
All right. I'll talk to you soon,
Dave. Take care, Robin.
Bye. Our buddy Dave in the Blind. So glad Christine's coming home. All right. We got to do this. This is an update. Was it Friday on the front porch when we were talking about Steven Crowder? And I played the audio of him screaming at his 8 months pregnant with twins estranged wife. Yeah, her name is Hillary. And he was screaming at her about not doing her wifely duties, like, you know, giving medicine to the dogs that could be harmful to their soon to be born twins. Well, there's more. According to the New York Post, and I know it's the New York Post, but this seems to have the ring of truth to it. Remember, Steven Crowder is one of those advocates for traditional masculinity. Him and Benny Drywife Shapiro and Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogaine and that lot. Well, it turns out now that he didn't just scream at his now estranged wife. He didn't just do that. The guy was a complete turd. According to the story in the New York Post, they interviewed 10 former employees of Crowder's operation who verified to the New York Post that he was abusive in the way he ran his outfit, that he had a propensity for screaming at employees. And one of the employees he screamed at was his own daddy. Yeah, but he also sent out orders to just fire certain people on a whim. He made his subordinates do his dirty laundry. At the Post, Kirsten Fleming reports the former staffers worked for the show at different times from its inception in 2016 through 2022, the vast majority had left the company voluntarily. They requested anonymity because they either feared retaliation or had signed NDAs. Well, the name of his stupid program was Louder with Crowder. Oh, that's clever. Well, six of the witnesses said they saw firsthand Crowder do things like, a road trip back from Illinois in a van after a show on a college campus back in March 2018. At the time, the show had a producer by the name of Jared Monroe. Steven Crowder, man of masculinity, nicknamed Jared Monroe, not gay Jared. So as the young man was asleep in the last row, you know what's coming next, right? You know. Crowder sat up front and told everybody what he was going to do, and he climbed over and placed his testicles and his scrotum and penis on his employee's shoulder. And then in 2018, they were on a plane, six people from the company. And a former employee said Crowder placed his scrotum on his assistant and childhood friend John Goodman's, not that John Goodman, who was just,
you put your dick on my shoulder.
And that he did these things as a power play, a power move. And he's got a thing for whipping out his equipment. Wonder if Hillary knew about all this. One of the anonymous people interviewed by the Post said, if your manager at Red Lobster did this, it would be national news. So it's drip, drip, drip. Remember how they had drip, drip, drip? My friends, it's a drip, drip, drip of lewd information coming from the Clinton White House. Drip, drip, drip. And for a guy who is, remember, he is staunchly, devoutly Roman Catholic. Big time Christian. No, this is not prayer meeting Wednesday. Yeah, I'm thinking maybe he's not quite everything he represents himself as to the public to be. Oops. And if you can't remember, if you've never seen him, I'll bet you actually have. There is a meme that goes around. And I mentioned this Friday, it was a banner in front of a table that says, "Male privilege is a myth, changed my mind." It has subsequently been hilariously re-memed time after time after time. With people changing it to things like, Pluto is not a planet, change my mind. Or, traps are not gay, change my mind. Maybe he's just a case of, I don't know, arrested development. But damn. And then on a more serious note, as we move inexorably toward close of the program. Thanks again, Mark and Christopher. Thank you. It appears that 20,000 sons of Mother Muscovy have been sent to their grisly deaths by Vlad Putin. And the head of the Wagner Group is once again complaining that he's not getting enough bullets. 200,000 Russians dead in 6 months. That's from newly declassified American intelligence. And the 20,000 dead are out of a total number of 100,000 casualties. Half of the dead are from the Wagner Group. And they're basically, the Wagner Group consists of people who were told, men who were told, well, you know, if you can survive it, you get out of prison. And they were thrown into the, among other things, the slaughterhouse in Bakhmut. and as Kirby said in his briefing, they lacked sufficient combat training, combat leadership, or any sense of organizational command and control. It seems like Vlad Putin is trying to use the Stalingrad strategy of we've got more people than they have bullets. They're just literally cannon fodder. Meanwhile, Dmitry Peskov at the Kremlin said, these numbers taken from nowhere are unreliable. Washington simply does not have the possibility to name any correct figures. They do not have such data. But this jives with the November numbers given out by General Mark Milley, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And he said that the war thus far had wound up with 100,000 casualties on both sides. And Mother Muscovy is doing everything in its power to suppress the information from the Russian people. Most of the dead are from either Asia or South Caucasus, Central Asia. James Nixie at the Russia Eurasia program at Chatham House, a think tank in London, said, Russia has been cherry-picking from the easiest parts of society where they'll get the least pushback. That gets harder as you start to churn through the cannon fodder and you get to people who are more likely to refuse and rise up. In the meantime, the South African government has delivered a message to Putin personally. There is potentially a meeting there in South Africa, and South Africa is a participant in various organizations like the International Criminal Court. And in order to remain signatory to it, they have to honor things like arrest warrants. And so I'm looking for the story here. I thought I had it earlier. According to published reports, he has been told he could be arrested if he attends an economic summit being hosted in South Africa in coming months. The BRICS bloc, which is primarily controlled by Russia and China, is hosting the summit in South Africa, which is in fact a member of the International Criminal Court. A senior government official in South Africa told the Sunday Times of South Africa that the country doesn't have a choice but to arrest Putin if he chooses to attend the BRICS summit. There's no option not to arrest Putin. If he comes here, we have to arrest him. The only option we have is for him to connect via Teams or Zoom from Moscow. Oh, darn. So maybe it looks like he won't be going. Maybe won't be going to South Africa, because having Putin on their soil might not be good for their international relations with the rest of the country. What else? How about a little something from Florida? This is disgusting for a Titanic Tuesday. A police captain in Miami got himself canned for over allegations that he committed, quote, outrageous acts of despicable discrimination against women and racial minorities. Nearly 75 separate allegations of misconduct leveled against him over an 18-year career on the force. He was finally fired last September. Captain Javier Ortiz. 75 separate allegations of misconduct against women and minorities, but the cop union still stood up for Captain Javier Ortiz. And so having been fired, now, well, a spokesman for the cop union said, the Miami Police, the South Florida Police Benevolent Association, on behalf of Captain Javier Ortiz and the City of Miami, have reached a resolution to all pending matters regarding the employment of Captain Ortiz. Both parties believe it is in the best interest of the citizens of the City of Miami and Captain Ortiz, you know, the citizens of Miami who aren't women or minorities. He's temporarily returning to a desk job after reaching a settlement with the department that will see him awarded several months of back pay. Ortiz will not be given his own gun or take-home car. So basically, they're going to let him get the back pay, accrue his time toward his pension, and retire with the whole shooting match. In the course of 18 years, he was subjected to 3 lawsuits, 2 suspensions, dozens of complaints about discrimination and improper use of force. He ranted about his race at a public meeting, referred to people, black folks, as colored. Sleep tight tonight, Miami. And in Davis, California, we have a friend who lived there. Haven't heard from him in a while. Hey, Marty. The Sacramento Bee reporting Davis police are hunting a monster. And now officials are saying it's highly likely he's a serial killer. There have been 3 stabbings in Davis, a college town. The victims have no real apparent connection to one another. Probably a resident of Davis. One expert on serial killers says that he probably lives in the city. He's filled with rage. Mark Seferic, a former Davis police detective and investigator with the FBI's Behavioral Analysis Unit, said the chances that these cases are not linked is very small. One of the things here is we really don't have a motive. Davis is a relatively small community. It's very likely these cases are linked. They are stabbing deaths, multiple stab wound deaths for 2 victims, and a homeless woman stabbed multiple times through her tent. She is still alive in critical condition as of today. And the police chief said, we've never seen anything like this at all. And the last cop has been dragged to justice in the murder of George Floyd. Tu Tao, former Minneapolis police officer, found guilty of aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. He was the cop who kept the crowd of bystanders back so that Derek Chauvin could go about the business of murdering George Floyd with his knee on George Floyd's neck. Minnesota Judge Peter Cahill said Tao actively encouraged his three colleagues' dangerous prone restraint of Floyd. Like the bystanders, Tao could see Floyd's life slowly ebbing away as the restraint continued, yet Tao made a conscious decision to actively participate in Floyd's death. He held back the concerned bystanders and even prevented an off-duty Minneapolis firefighter from rendering the medical aid to Floyd that he so desperately needed. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said the conviction of Tao Tao is historic and the right outcome. It brings one more measure of accountability in the tragic death of George Floyd. Accountability is not justice, but it is a step on the road to justice. So, that's pretty much it for this evening. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much to Mark. Thank you, Christopher. That's wonderful, wonderful to have gotten the month started in proper form. We're fully funded for the first 2 days. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve and Roger in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, please like and subscribe if you're listening to the podcast, whatever platform you're listening on. If you're listening on TuneIn, you can get us, if you never have, get us closer to 1,000 unique listeners on the TuneIn platform alone. That'd be wonderful. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I hope the audio works out this evening, because it's been kind of weird from jump today. We'll cross our fingers. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Please get your boosters. If you're over 65 or if you have comorbidities, see if you can get another booster before they're not free, if you're within the time frame. Wear your mask when you're around maggots, because they're a filthy lot. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket and purse. You know, even after COVID is just a memory, if it will ever be just a memory. Having the hand sanitizer handy is just good practice. And, maintain your social distance. And if it should so happen that you are out and about, and a guy with a prove me wrong sign comes towards you and he's reaching into his trousers to flip his junk out, well, avoid Steven Crowder like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.